Chevrolet. Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here for the next 2 hours, whether you like it or not, talking about cars and car repair problems and stuff like that. It usually gets busy at the end of the show, between 11:45 and 12. Gets kind of busy, but now the lines are wide open. There's five of them, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and you're welcome to grab them anytime you want. Well, there's four of us in here today. We got Kurt Rock from Kurt's Automotive, I-17 and Bell. We got Eric, who's some kid that he found on the side of the road one day and decided to teach him how to do oil changes. He's to my right. Then Alan, my son, who is like Eric. He's sitting just opposite of me. And God bless him. They're all, Kurt, what do you think?
They're learning. I don't know if they could ever fill our shoes, Mark.
Oh, you know, I don't know. That's a good point. I don't know. Alan has more diesel experience than anybody in our place, but that's pretty much all he works on. So if all of us were working on Volvos, just Volvos, we'd have the same skills that he has, but we're not. And Eric, how long are you still on probation?
I think it will be until he dies.
Yeah.
He was talking about with the law, not
oh,
me.
Yeah. Oh, so you want to talk about that then?
I don't ever get myself in trouble.
You don't?
Yeah. It's a figment of your imagination.
Mine?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I don't think it's mine. I think Kurt's over there thumbing his thumbs up. Oh, gosh. So anything new in your world? Anything you fixed that's special that nobody else could fix? Any of the three of you, if you guys can wake up.
Yeah. No. It's 10 o'clock and it's Saturday. We don't wake up yet.
Yeah. Okay. Alan?
No, we always fix stuff that people can't fix.
Get your mic a little closer. You can always
fix it.
That's
what we do.
Okay. Well, I do know that we had Daryl's truck come in not too long ago. And I think the estimate was like blower ball joints and half the front end?
Yeah.
Okay. And so what did you find?
Lower ball joints and half most of the front end.
That's a great answer. your time is real short here.
Nah, it was that, and just we had a body mount that was bad. We had the ball joint on the track bar was bad. Just a bunch of front end work.
Okay, and then there was a leak, something with to do with the leak, or there was something that he didn't even know about.
Oh yeah, the CCV filter had never been changed, and it had burst at the seams and was, you know, puking oil down the back of the engine and stuff.
Okay, so what's the CC?
Crankcase ventilation filter.
Okay.
Basically, it allows the engine to vent, but it grabs all the oil and contaminants that comes out of the engine into a filter that needs to be changed.
And what's the time frame on that?
It's different. I know Dodge is 67,500 right on the nose. It comes on. The message comes on. I don't know what Ford's is, to be honest with you.
I can tell you that if they don't service it and they don't run it out of oil, they're buying an engine.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, we got one there now.
It was right at just under 90,000 miles, and they ran it out of oil.
No kidding.
Because of the CCV?
Uh-huh.
I had one here on Friday with 240 on it. Never been done.
Huh.
Still
riding. It burst, though, and it was just running oil out of it.
Dodge or Ford?
Ford.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah.
What do you think, son? Ford. We're just talking about Fords right now. I mean, that's the rest
one
of the
I have
show.
With Dodge, yeah.
we can. All right. So, what was that Ford? Was it the newer model?
Yeah, 6.7.
6.7.
It was a 15, wasn't it, Eric?
No, it's a 19.
19.
Ooh. How much was it? He's got an idea what the motor was.
I bet you it's 20.
Eric,
I think we're up around 25 actually.
Yeah. Okay. I was gonna say at least 20. Right.
Are you guys, how many miles do we have on it?
Under 90.
Under 90, 80 some.
And yeah. It's a 19?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a flatbed, so he's probably working it. Yeah, okay. I would assume.
Yeah, so if you're going to, I can understand the 20 to 25, because more than likely you're going to do belts and hoses and all that kind of stuff just because of the 120,000 miles on it.
Mm-hmm.
Holy mackerel. That's a tough lesson.
Yeah.
Did he use any bad words at all when you told him? Or did he already know when it was?
I don't know. I think he's still in the hospital. We haven't heard from him.
Something about still owing, $40,000 on the truck, and
you got no choice at that point.
Well, it's worth nothing as it sits.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's the truth. We see that a lot, especially with the 6.0s. You know, people finance these things, you know, and they owe 15 on it. Head gaskets are blown. You're staring at a $12,000 face bill in the face. What do you do? I mean, the truck isn't worth anything as it sits because it won't run. You can't sell it. You owe 12 on it.
The only thing
it needs 12.
The only thing I can think of is a fire.
Seriously.
A flood is way too
Wait
hard.
A minute. Are we talking about breaking the law already?
No, a legal fire.
Oh, a legal fire.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh. Well, the answer to the question is don't buy a 6.0. That's the real issue right there. Don't ever buy a 6.0. The story about the 6.0 that I was involved in is a friend of mine bought fleet vehicles for a huge mining company. And I don't know, they bought 100 of those 6.0s. And they had overheat problems. They had water in the oil. They had all the stereotypical things. And they would take it in, and they did heads, and they did this, and they did that. And they finally, obviously they were a big company. I can't name who they are. But they just returned them all.
Wow.
They just said, here, they're all yours. We're not going to do this anymore. You guys haven't fixed it. Head bolts, all kinds of stuff. So today, Alan, we know it's what?
Everything.
I thought it was some of the coolers and stuff.
There's not one thing.
Okay, is there a common thing?
There's 10 common things.
Okay, go ahead. The 6 liters.
Thick 'em. Okay. You've got standpipe tubes. You've got oil rail nipples. You've got injectors. You've got turbo VGTs. You've got engine oil cooler. You've got EGR cooler. You've got high pressure oil pump. I mean,
all of that stuff.
All that stuff.
It's not at once. It's the menu is one or two of those. It's not anybody that
typically
comes in.
Yeah, okay. Typically you got inner. You're under the manifold. And then you got under the valve covers, and then you've got kind of all the rest of the stuff, which is your FICM, you know, your stuff like that.
FICM, tell
fuel injection control module.
Okay, all right. We can't talk code here. We have to. All right. So when they come in, is there different symptoms with each one of those? Valve covers?
No, under the valve covers.
I understand.
So fuel stuff. Yeah, there's different for all of them.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So the symptoms you really kind of point you in the right direction.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. How about the 602-508-0960? I may not have given that number out. 602-508-0960 is the number if you have a car question. So what about the ones that come in? To me, the biggest headache is somebody comes in and tells us to do this for their car because the kid at AutoZone said so. Does that happen?
Too much.
Alan?
Happened this week.
Yeah.
I mean, I can right off the bat.
Okay, so based on our experience, how many years experience?
40.
Okay, that's 80.
Probably 25.
Okay, so that's 105.
20, just a little under 21, yeah.
Okay, so we're talking about 140.
25 makes me 16, which is when I started working here.
I didn't call you on that.
You gave me a stupid look.
No,
that's Mark's standard look.
But you gave me a stupid look.
Listen, you can't count time when you were a kid with no whiskers picking up cigarette butts in the parking lot.
You said experience. That's automotive in-shop experience.
Okay. Yeah, picking up the trash.
Well, you didn't specify. I've been in the shop for 25 years.
Nevertheless, the problem, the universal agreement is the worst thing you can do is come in and tell us what it is.
They don't know.
Yeah. Tell us what to fix. Now, how many times are they right? Hold on, Eric. Eric first. How many times are they right? Or even close to the same?
I'd say 40-ish percent or
okay.
something.
How about you?
I don't know that I can measure it like that because I look at it a little bit different. Guy came in this week and said, check my brakes. Okay, no problem. You know, check the brakes. Oh, they're all good. 7:30 seconds, 8:30 seconds. He gets in his car and calls and goes, this thing is still vibrating while I stop. Well, that's not what you said. You didn't say you have a pulsation when you stop. You said check the brakes.
Yeah.
So he was trying to outsmart us. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know, but I would somewhere in that neighborhood when they do dictate the repair.
I was going to go with about 25% of the time.
And so was I.
You know, we may have a better a three-whiskered kid on our end of town than you do. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Okay, Gil, who we got?
We have Ray.
Ray, good morning. How can we help you?
Okay, good. I was listening to all your stuff, and it's interesting to hear you guys talking bits back and forth. Here's my issue. I have a 2003 Ford Explorer V8, purchased new back in 2003. Got 143,000 miles on it. We've kept it well-maintained and always had it checked and everything. And we've driven it across country from the East Coast three times, back and forth. And this year, we drove out again from the East Coast. And we had no issues until we actually got off the highway about a month ago in Peoria. And what it was when we started to slow down to a stop, we could hear a thud with a little bit of a jolt at about 15 to 25 miles an hour. So when we stopped using, I shouldn't say stopped, but we had it in the garage for a little while, took it out. When we've taken out the last couple times, that sound does not occur until we've probably driven about 5 to 10 miles of driving before it starts to occur. And it isn't in all instances. If I slow down very carefully with a slow deceleration, it doesn't occur. But if I do more of a quick or a hard stop, it does occur. Now, before driving it out each year, I do have my auto shop in Connecticut check the car out. And interesting enough, this year I mentioned that I had a noise at 55 miles an hour on the highway that would just be there between 55 miles an hour, plus or minus a few, and then go away. So when they checked it out, they replaced the differential, which took care of the noise. They did some rear brakes and some rear axle bearings. But another thing I did was when I got here, I looked underneath the back end, and I did see a bit of liquid spatter up on the spare tire and just in front of where the differential is. When I called the shop, the owner said, well, when they filled up the differential case in cold weather, what may have happened is it may have expanded a bit in the warm weather, and some of the liquid leaked out. And he said he didn't think that was related, the flood
okay,
was related
okay,
to it.
Okay, okay, okay. As far as the differential excuse, I got to jump on that first. Him guessing is as stupid as the customer's guessing, okay? You can't take that. You have to go get it checked. Is the vent puking oil out of it? Is it too full? Is the rear cover leaking? Whatever. But he's no better at telling you what's wrong than I would if I was in Phoenix and you were back east. Let's go with the clunk. Let me ask you a question. So you're coming to a stop, and there's kind of an abrupt thump. Does it appear to be transmission related? Can you feel it with the seat of your pants? Anything?
Yeah, we can feel it a bit. And as I say, it's in that when I've been more noticeable of it, it's in about the 15 to 20 mile an hour area of the.
Okay,
you know,
Eric.
There's three things that come to mind.
Okay.
He's got a little bit of mileage on it. He could have a downshift pattern that's learned a little wrong or something, needs service or something and reset. He might have a U-joint starting to go bad because he just talked about having diff out, so they got to pull drive shaft. If he moved the U-joint, bound it up or something, we could have that should cause vibrations other times, but it could still be do it. Or they could have got ring and pinion set wrong if they just redid the rear diff. And we're feeling that on a brush because as it downshifts, it's going to jar on that drive shaft. So,
are you with him?
I'm with him on that. I was thinking right along them lines.
All right, I'm with the downshift too. And here's what I want you to do. I want you to drive it and manually take control of the transmission. Does that make sense? I want you to start in low and then click up. You can keep Have you got the overdrive or lock button on your shifter?
You know, I'm not sure of that.
All right.
Yeah, there should be a manual way to go down each gear as he slows down and do it himself instead of.
So that's what you really need to do. You need to be able to duplicate it, and if you can go in and say, hey, if I manually take control of the shift, it doesn't happen, and then when I let the truck make its decision, then it does happen, and it only happens cold or hot. That's the kind of stuff that we need.
Yeah, that'll help.
That'll help a lot. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here talking about cars with Kurt and Eric, and they're from Kurt's Automotive in Bell and I-17. Real quick, though, we all talked at the break, and so the question is we all had some kind of an idea of what it might be with respect to race car.
Yeah.
Eric, if you drove it, could you tell what's wrong with it?
You could tell what area is coming from.
Okay. Yeah. Now, Alan?
Yeah.
Drive it? Mm-hmm. Kurt?
I believe so.
Okay. And then we talked about ring and pinion lash. Mm-hmm. We talked about suspension shift. We talked about downshifting. Mm-hmm. So, but the real key here is we think, we're pretty sure we could diagnose it.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And Ray, if you're still listening, get a hold of Eric at Kurtz Automotive. He'll take it for a drive for free. And then if it's not anything more, he'll fix it for free. Let's go.
And if he asks nice, he might buy you lunch.
Yeah. that's a good close,
hey,
right there.
Eric, I want the company credit card back.
Okay. Action Auto Repair down the street from you, I-17 in Deer
good
Valley.
Guys.
Full service family owned auto repair shop, Deer Valley, since 83. Tom's got ASE Master Certified Technician. And I'm going to key off what you just said. You guys are competitors. You just said he's a good guy.
Yes, he is.
That's what's best about our industry. Yeah. The worst is the guys that just badmouth everybody in the world. But it's nice to hear that what you just said. Let's go to the phones. Rob, you're up next, Rob.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Well, we're a little ornery, and a couple of us have been drinking, but I'm not going to tell you who that is.
Well, happy Saturday to you. Hey, I fell into guardianship of a 1970 Ford F-100.
Okay.
And it's in perfect condition, just about. I got a main bearing leak, but that's about it. And it's been painted by a second-rate paint shop before. The thing is I want to get it restored to its original 1970 glory, the glory days of the muscle machines. And I'm looking for a shop. I'm not a car guy, but I am a car guy. I appreciate cars, but I don't have the tools or the time to work on them myself.
Okay, it's going to make a difference. Factory fresh means one thing, but if you're going to turn it into a hot rod with fuel injection and all that kind of stuff is another. But what I heard you say is you wanted to take it back the way it came off the showroom floor.
Yes, sir. With a few safety additions, I want to get disc brakes and power brakes put on it.
Okay.
Of course, and power steering.
Okay. Now we have these come in just like you have, and what we insist is they've been sitting for a long time. It's we got to get them to start, run, and stop first. Mm-hmm. That's all there is to it.
I got that going. I'm all taking it to work about twice a week.
You got anybody in your part of town?
Oh.
What? All right, you think about it.
Yeah, I got to think.
Blackwell, 40th Street.
Yeah, that's probably the closest.
Yeah, 40th, not Glendale, 40th Street and Greenway,
yeah.
Tom Blackwell. Tell him you have a $4,000 coupon from Salem off of the repair.
Salem?
Salem, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Tom is really good at what you're talking about. I had an old Chevy pickup not too long ago that had a bunch of problems. We were too busy to take care of it. I shipped it up there. The lady thinks he walks on water. He just did a Firebird with the eagle on the hood. He did it for free for a veteran. He's not going to do yours for free, Bob. But he's somebody you need to talk to. I think he's going to have to schedule you, but I think he's the best one for you.
Yeah.
Okay?
And this cat's name's Tom?
Tom Blackwell. And his shop is Blackwell Automotive. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Good luck.
Hey, thank you,
you
so much.
You're welcome. Bob, you're up next. Bob, how can we help you?
Morning, guys. Do you guys come across many people that are unhappy with the plastic canister filters, you know, that oil filters that they're putting on new cars now?
I don't know that anybody's really...
Yeah, I haven't. Alan?
You talking about the canister type, or I mean, we see a lot of the caps break and leak, but I don't know about the
exactly. You got to have that big lug, that big plastic, because there's a company I came across, Baxter Performance USA, and they make an adapter where you can take off that plastic canister and put on an adapter where you can go back to a regular old spin-on filter.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah,
but I wonder if you heard anything about them or not.
Never, for us, it's kind of a need. You know, if it's not a need for us, if we were stripping two of these a week, then that's one thing. But for us, you know, we kind of work off of need. If it's something we see that needs it, I'll look for a product that fills that need. But never been a huge issue for us.
And if it's been hammered on and somebody used a pipe wrench on it and all that kind of stuff, typically the path of least resistance is just get another one from the factory or from that kind of thing. But if you want to do that, the only thing I'd do is I'd type it into the internet and I'd put the word reviews after it. and go to their website or go to Google or go to Yelp or whatever, just make sure that he's got at least 4 stars for this product, or he has 4 stars for all of his redesigned products, and that will give you some comfort. And then I'd say go ahead if that makes you happy. The spin-ons are nice. Now, is this going to put the spin-on face down? If you take
it, sounds like that's,
yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah. If the dome on the oil filter is 12 o'clock, and the gasket is sealing at the 6 o'clock position, it's going to be an ugly change.
There's going to be a little bit of leakage.
There's going to be a lot of oil somewhere, and you'd probably have to take a large beach towel from the house and wrap it around that housing in order to gather up all of that.
Yeah.
Now, if you really want to make a mess, poke a hole in the top of the filter first.
Yeah.
And that'll give it a vent to just really gush. That would be the only downside, right?
Yeah.
That'd be the only downside. Yeah. Okay. Well, good luck to you, Bob. That's a great question. I don't know if we had that before. Although, I think you'll both agree, all three of
you.
2 minutes. There are places in a car we can improve.
Yes.
Yes.
There's lots of parts that we can make better than what it came with, that'll last longer, that's kind of a redesign, stuff like that. So if you think of one, we're going to talk about that on the other end. But the lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Kurt and Eric are here. Eric is Kurt's right hand, and then Kurt's drug around the office by his wife, and she's actually the big king of the shop. Alan's my son. We're down here at Warner and I-10, and Kurt's Automotive is up at I-17 and Bell Road. And we've dealt with you guys for many years.
Yes.
And again, you guys have been heroes because you're way north of us, and we've sent cars to you. And the one that stands out the most is the lady who needed an engine, and you put an oil pressure switch in it. First of all, she was really happy with you, but I think I got a little bit of the attaboy sending it to you. But the whole thing on the phone was no engine clatter, red oil light on, no engine clatter, and she didn't know if anybody had pulled the dipstick. Yeah. They just said that the oil light means it needs a motor.
Yeah.
And I think you guys, did you do it? Would you have done a manual oil pressure test?
I think Eric done a manual check on it just to verify.
So pull the pressure switch out,
Screw
in a gauge, and look at it to see if it has sufficient oil pressure. So the low side is what?
20-ish.
Okay, and the typical high side?
60.
Okay, so that's the range for just about every car.
Yeah.
Okay. All righty, 602-508-0960. Kurtz Automotive is represented here. My name's Mark Salem. Alan's my son. Well, sometimes I'll admit that, but not always. 602-508-0960. I guess I should push all the buttons instead of just talking. You know what I mean? So 602-508-0960. Let me tell you real quick about AutoDynamics, Sun City's largest and most trusted automotive shop for complete repairs. Family owned and operated since 1982. I've known Chuck Knighty since 1979. So I know the family, and I know that their staff and their technicians are good. So if you're in Sun City, the only shop I can recommend is Automotive Dynamics. Okay, Mike, you're up first. How can we help you?
Yes, I've got a 2000 Grand Cherokee Laredo that's been sitting in my garage for the last 4 or 5 years. And I want to put it back to the 2000 look.
Okay.
Transmission needs to be replaced, and some things like that. In the Queen Creek area, you know anybody that'd be good to take it to?
This is always a tough question for me.
Yeah.
I'm picking really good shops from all over the valley, and although people have accused me of this as being some kind of a self-serving thing, I don't have anybody south of the river except me. And we're over on Warner and I-10, and we'd be happy to help you. You're certainly welcome to talk to a couple of auto parts stores. Sometimes they'll tell you about a shop that buys lots of parts, and that might be their motivation, but that's okay if you get the same name. Hey, who pays their bills? Who doesn't try the parts and then brings them back? Because they're trying, you know, it has this, oh, it isn't, and then they return it. So who pays their bill, who we sell parts to, and they don't return them, and generally who's doing a good job fixing cars. So you could check a couple of auto parts stores and maybe find somebody in your area. But I'm sorry, the closest one I have to you is in Mesa, way up on Main Street in Stapley. That's Thompson's Auto Repair. But he's the only one on the east side of the valley that I have a pretty stringent filter. So some of them don't make the filter. So that's the best I can do, Mike. I'm sorry. And anyway, thank you. The name of our shop is Salem Boys, and you can look it up on the phone book or whatever. And if we fit your bill, then that's fine. And if not, then the auto parts stores is a great place to go. Let's move on to Daryl. Daryl, good morning.
Good morning. How's it going, sir?
Good. We're behaving ourselves, and none of us have any bruises.
Well, all right. Check this one out. It's driving me crazy. I got a 2006 Chevy Silverado. 4x4 gas motor, the, what is it, 5.3 or 5.6? I never remember that.
5.3, yeah.
Automatic. Yeah, okay. Now, I got a check engine light that comes on, but it corrects itself. It comes on, it flashes, it can stay on for maybe 50 miles, and it goes off. I took it down to AutoZone or some of the other
places. Stop right. No, I'm not going to stop. Okay? No, you're going to stop. Okay? You're stopping. And we're not going to listen to a three-whiskered kid from one of the auto parts store with a scanner that costs $20 that plugs into your car and tells everybody what to buy. That's not the case. Eric, how many O2 sensor codes are actually the O2 sensor?
Oh, about 1 in 10.
Yeah. Anybody else?
Yeah, that's...
I mean, how many different codes can we have that a lean O2 sensor code, a vacuum leak? I mean, there's 100 different things that can cause that. A ridge condition on the O2 sensor, the air filter's plugged up. So tell us what the code is. That's all I want to know.
Oh, okay. I do not have the code number. Okay. Now that I've been demasculated.
Okay.
Well, he said it flashed, Mark.
Wow. Yeah, it's a misfire code.
Okay.
It's a misfire code. It flashed.
Okay.
I'm going to start my beer run early.
Okay. All right. I missed the part about flashing. The flashing, if it comes on and goes off and flashes.
Okay. Now, they usually... if I'm coasting down a hill, it will flash. And then as I get down to the bottom, it will go off. If I go off a hill sometimes, then I don't race it. It can come on. Sometimes it will stay on. It will actually, sometimes around town, it will actually go into a lift mode.
We have to, Eric, is there a chance in hell you're going to be able to fix this with the information he's got?
No, I'm going back to the flashing light. That's the best symptom he's given me so far.
Okay. And anybody else at the table?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a misfire. He's got a misfire.
We got to go in, and we got to find the misfire. So give me two examples of a misfire.
Along those lifters are very common.
Okay. And ignition coils?
Yeah, coils.
Okay. Spark plugs?
Spark plugs.
Okay.
Injector, fuel injector bed.
Okay. So that's what we got. We got one cylinder that isn't cooperating, and so we can be missing too much air, too little fuel, a bad coil pack, too much fuel. We got all of that. So a tailpipe examination might help you if you can get it in the bay.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just have to drive it till it gets worse and easier to find.
Yeah.
So that's it. But again, it's just too vague. But they give them a flavor of what we actually look for. Bob, you're up next. How can we help you?
Yeah, Mark, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I've got an 06 GMC, the small V8.
Okay.
What's that, the 4.7?
4.8? Yep.
4.8. And I've had it into two different shops. The first shop, I just wasn't able to leave it with them because I was out of town and had to return back to Phoenix. He diagnosed it as a miss on the 8th cylinder. I took it to a shop here in Phoenix, had them change the plugs, the wires, check the all the ignition, and they told me that I needed to mill the head or replace the engine. So I immediately paid the bill with them and retrieved my truck.
Okay, we're going to have to take a break. You stay right there.
Advice.
Go ahead and say that last sentence again. Okay. I think
I do have a code. It's the PO300 code.
That's multiple misfire.
Okay.
Random misfire.
Okay. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere, Bob. The rest of you, 602-508-0960. We want your make and model and symptoms. Well, welcome back, everybody. What do you want me to push?
Turn off the speakers so we don't get feedback.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. I'm frazzled today. I'm telling you what. I'm frazzled. Okay. Let me talk about Blackwell Automotive. We already did 40th Street and Greenway. Tom's been out of jail, what, 2 years? And he's really good at what he does. Yeah. He does the old cars. He really does a good job with the old cars. I should have said something, but I'm not quite sure that he doesn't have a backlog right now.
Yeah.
And so if that's the case, then it's the case, and they can do it. Okay, we're going to go back to Bob, who had an 06 GMC. He has a 4.8 liter, and he has a PO300. We're going to talk about it.
06?
Yeah.
06. 06. What year did they start the DOD?
I thought it was 07. I don't remember.
Okay,
anyway. We'll talk about both of them. Now, the young bucks are going to discuss this. Eric, you go first.
Well, is Bob still there?
Yeah, he's still here.
What
symptoms do you have, Bob? Do you have any noises, any rough running? When does it act up?
Only at idle. It has a rough idle, but when I'm running down the highway, you can't feel a miss or anything.
Okay. And is it having
the check engine light came on, so I immediately had it diagnostic done.
Okay, we don't care.
I just put fuel additive.
Okay, none of that matters. We want to have talk with you. Yeah. Okay, we want to talk about symptoms. Go.
Okay.
Hang on.
I lost the mic.
Okay.
Something happened.
Oh, there I am. All right, you're
something
back in.
Something went back in.
All right.
Yeah, what he's describing there. It's leaning out or richening up on that cylinder or not firing the coil or something. So, I mean, we need a little more detail, but known engine noise is a good thing because the bad side of it is there was engine noise with it ticking, running all the time down the road. We'd be talking more internal stuff, but this seems to be more external, so it should be easier to find and fix.
Alan?
I think he's in the very beginning stages of lifter issues.
Okay.
A slight misfire at idle. That's where it typically starts, is you get a rough idle. But it could be. I mean, it could be a coil pack going out. It could be a plug or a clogged fuel injector. But typically we see. Ever had any traction control or ABS codes or lights?
No.
No, never? Okay.
Okay, well, that's important to us.
Just the engine. I mean, the engine light does come on.
Yeah,
okay,
no,
well,
yeah.
We got that.
Yeah,
well, here, the reason why we have questions and the answers are kind of important. Alan, explain why you ask him about the ABS light.
When these things get really bad, the engine will actually misread the misfire as an ABS code. It will think that, and it will throw a traction control or a Stabilitrack or an ABS light because it will. The misfire will be so bad it will disrupt the signal from the ABS sensor. So you'll get those. So that's why I asked that. That's usually in the latter stages when it gets real bad.
When the ABS is activated, the car shakes because there's application of the brakes and non-application of the brakes. And so that can sometimes be misinterpreted as an engine miss. So it's really hard to tell a customer, you've got an ABS code or an ABS light, but we're really going to have to work on the engine.
Yeah.
Now, you were saying that because it came and go, that's going to eliminate what? Which direction were you going in?
Well, with it happening most at idle, that's when you have more dependence on your vacuum, intake leak to be more effective on it. Your lifter lift usually, if you're starting to like get a flat lobe on a cam or something, you got enough air to idle because you don't need much. But under higher load, that's usually when it misses. If you're starting to wear on a cam, things like that. So it's possible he could have a lifter or a valve starting to act up.
The beginning
stages. But usually there's some other noises or symptoms that go with it.
Okay, so what we got is we got a camshaft that starts wearing the lobe.
Mm-hmm.
So the camshaft's coming apart. It's going to take the lifter with us. And as that happens, the valve no longer opens its full stroke.
Right.
So because the valve...
It works in reverse.
Okay.
The lifter takes out the cam.
Okay.
So
the lifter causes the cam to deteriorate. The cam has got a lobe on it. So as the lobe rolls around, it pushes on the lifter. The lifter pushes on the push rod. The push rod goes to the valve rocker and so forth and so on.
Yeah.
So what we've got here is we've got a disconnect down there at the cam or the lifter, and that's going to cause the valve to change, and that's going to cause a symptom. That diagnosis, could you two guys drive it and come to that conclusion?
That'd be tough.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's the first step in the diagnostic process?
A running compression test.
Okay. Okay. So plug in a scanner.
Yeah, and some pressure sensors into the cylinder.
Okay. And so then just run it.
Yeah.
Okay, Alan?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. I know that we diagnose them a lot, but...
Could you do an oil contamination and find metal in the oil?
That's pretty far along.
Okay.
That would be pretty... And a lot of times, too, you'll get a lifter, but it'll be so soon that it won't have done the cam yet. It won't have damaged the cam yet.
And if you had a valve not seating right in that one cylinder, like it'd been running lean and it was waving a little bit, you wouldn't have anything in your oil from that.
Okay. Now, when the lifter and the lifter and the cam start wearing, what's that symptom going to sound like?
A lot of noise.
Yeah, a lot.
So we're going to go into a lot of noise.
Yeah.
Misfire.
Then the two of you, what's the repair? Is it a camshaft and all the lifters?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And
worst
that's,
case.
All right. So worst case scenario. And give me a range.
3 to 5.
You?
I was thinking more like 4 to 7.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. And that's not unusual because... He may not have the stuff you have, and you may be playing on the conservative side.
Well, I usually say that, too, because 3 is more like just the lifters, whereas 5 is more like just the cam. It's kind of the way I looked at it, but, yeah, it's expensive.
The 4 to 7 is going to cover all the options.
Including a valve job, because you got to pull the heads on there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the funny part is they still, to this day, haven't changed that.
And so we're talking about 06, 07s.
Yeah. And 19. So, we just did a 19 with – they still haven't to
same
this
design.
Day. Have not changed that.
You know, I don't believe you guys. Chevrolet's never done anything wrong in its whole life.
It was an ex-Ford engineer that went to work for
Does
that make you feel better, Mark?
What's going to make me feel better? We're going to go take care of Rhonda. You know, I want to tell you something. Dealing with women is just a lot easier than those hairy-chested guys. You know what I'm saying? It's just a lot easier. They are so good about symptoms.
Mark.
But when they said, my husband said, that's when your eyes glaze over. Okay, Rhonda. You're up.
Well, how do you know I don't have a hairy chest?
You know, I'm not touching that. I want to tell you something. If you're a woman and you got a hairy chest, I'll pay to see it. Okay.
actually, I'm calling about my 14 Ford Flex.
Okay.
I love my car. It runs great. The problem I have is the Sync stereo system, and I wanted to talk to somebody that wasn't trying to sell me something.
Okay.
What problem are you having with it?
Everything. It's hard to connect. Sometimes I can't connect at all. If I have my phone connected and stop the car, go inside somewhere for 20 minutes or so, get back in the car, it won't reconnect. I've done the upgrade.
Have you had it back to the... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I've not had it back to the dealer. At this point, I'm wondering if I can just replace it with something that is similar without losing the backup camera and all the other good stuff.
Well, the answer to that question is yes, but let me jump back here for a second. There is a ton and tons of updates for those Sync systems. They're hard to do. It's not just one of the over-the-air updates. It's going with the scan tool and actually do it yourself. Before I spend a bunch of money on replacing that head unit and all the modules and all the Sync stuff to make that thing sync, I would definitely find someone, a dealer or a third-party shop that can actually go in there and update that, because the Sync is very difficult to do it. Not everyone can do it, and it fixes 99% of the problems.
So who would you suggest? Okay. Who do you know that can handle that?
We could do it here, but other than that, a dealer, I don't know what everybody else
can. How about you guys, North?
Yeah, we have the capability.
Okay, so you got Bell and I-17, and you got Warner and I-10. And so give me both of you think of a number, Alan, you first. As little as much as?
I would say 300 to 500.
Okay.
There's something about it that makes it more expensive than a typical flash program, and I don't remember what that is.
And a flash program is the same as when you get onto your computer, there's an update available, and you pick the update, you walk away, there's all this screen stuff going on, and it's just getting new software. Yeah. What an update.
Yeah. I was going to say 200 to 300.
All right. So you got a $200 to $400 spread there, and it has everything to do with how long it takes and how many upgrades there are, because the car needs monitoring during that period of time.
Yeah.
And nobody can open up the door. Nobody can do anything stupid.
Yeah.
We had a BMW in the other day. Anyway, did I get you? Did I?
Yeah, because I have the same problem with the 2013 F-150. And I rent a lot of cars doing a lot of traveling, and the Fords are just terrible.
They had a lot of issues with those, but like I said before, I promise you, I'd be willing to bet that it's gonna, that a really good solid OEM, you know, yesterday's update will take care of all
that. And when
issues.
He says OEM, it's in the cloud, but we have access to that. Even though, you know, we do Chevys and Fords and Toyotas and Hondas, we have access to the same cloud. We pay a price. And so when we pay a price, that's going to be passed on to you. And so there's access to the cloud that we do. Should she try another phone? Should she sync another phone?
No. There's lots of issues. We've seen this a bunch of times.
Okay. You too, Eric?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, we got the Young Bucks saying this. Kurt and I are just sitting here deciding what to go to for lunch, but the Young Bucks have kind of handled that. Anyway, Rhonda, I am not. My wife just called, and she says, I'm not paying you to see your hairy chest. I just wanted to make that clear.
Okay. Thank you for the advice. To me, that's a cheap price to pay to have it totally fixed and not have to mess with a new system.
Yep. Okay. Try that first.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, God. I'm going to get in trouble over all of that. I'm telling you what. That's okay, though. Trouble's my middle name. Okay, do we have anybody else, Gil?
No, lines are open.
Okay, lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. We've got another hour of fun and frivolity and another 60 minutes for Mark to get in more trouble. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, Kurt and Eric from Kurt's Automotive, I-17 and Bell. And you're an ASE certified?
Yeah.
Master?
Master.
Okay, I'm a master?
I'm a master.
He's a master. And you've got?
I am a... What is less than a master?
Well, you're ASC certified.
ASC certified.
Yeah. You're just not a master.
My brain is like a grand master, but it's just not on the paper. You know, I don't test well. Let's just put it that way.
He's a legend in his own mind.
That's right.
I tell you what, you talk about pulling rabbits out of your hats. He's done that a couple of times. But like you said, I can't tell you how many camshafts. And I mean, that's something that you can just bid in the parking lot.
Yeah.
It's just, you just know, you bid the worst case scenario and you go from there.
When you do two a month, it gets pretty simple.
What's that?
And when you do two a month, it gets pretty simple.
And this is a problem, this wear, abnormal wear between the camshaft and the lobe, which is in the center of the motor, deep within the motor. So the grill and the radiator and everything in front of it comes out. Yep. The heads come off, the exhaust manifold. This isn't an easy thing to do.
Active fuel management.
Yeah.
All, if your car doesn't have it, which I don't think any of them do, I don't think any of them don't have it, but I turn it off on all my cars. I'll tell you that right now. But the active fuel management is what causes this. That's the root of this issue, the VLOM, the variable.
Yeah.
Variable displacement
volume.
Deal.
Yeah. Variable oil displacement, but that's what starts everything.
We're using oil pressure to disable some of the cylinders.
Yep.
And because we disable it, we can make a V8 run on four cylinders or six cylinders, depending on the environment, depending on where their foot is at, depending on the road and the terrain, the wind, and all of that stuff. And so this active fuel management just says, okay, well, Alan's doing 51 miles an hour. The road's flat. He doesn't have the bed full of beer and a bunch of girlfriends in his truck. I'll get you in trouble, but you'll get out of it.
I'm not worried.
And and so we're going to kill a couple of cylinders to give him better fuel economy. And are you going to feel
theoretically?
That? Theoretically,
you can feel it. But okay. I will tell you this: the ones that we disable, and we disable a lot of them, it's just a little plug, $200 plug-in module. People get better mileage, and we've seen oil consumption issues be fixed by those active fuel management, by disabling that.
Okay, give me the spread of years on the active fuel management on the GM.
I think it was 2006, 2007 to current. Yeah.
Okay.
Gas motors.
Okay, so the active fuel control.
Active fuel management. Yeah, I don't know. Or it's a DOD, displacement on demand. Yeah. I don't know which one is
Dodge,
GM.
Dodge does it too, and we've done a bunch of deletes on those. So.
Yeah.
So you can take that away mm-hmm. to ensure that that problem is not likely to return.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Yes.
602-508-0960. We're going to be back with another hour of fun and frivolity. Is that what it is?
I don't know.
I don't know.
You use big words. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, I can't spell it, so I can't say it. So we'll be back in a few minutes. Mark Salem right here. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We have open lines available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you'd like to join us, that's the number. Real quick, Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is up at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Nate is a very good diesel guy. He's good with the Chevys, the Ford, the Dodges. He really does well. He also does some foreign diesel engines. But you can call him and ask him if that's one of them he does. I don't have a list. They can also go to their website, Strictly Diesel, 24 hours a day, and they sell lots of aftermarket stuff. And you can be assured that Nate is capable of making sure that the stuff that he sells is good. Now, you guys brought up the word CARB certified.
Yes.
Okay. CARB certified means that this adaptation of the car is emission certified.
Yes.
The government has stamped it saying this is okay. So that's what it means when you talk about CARB certified. I was going in the direction of when you start messing with the emissions, you get in trouble.
Yes.
But this is the, you fall back on CARB certified, then you can change and take out the active fuel management. Management. I'll get that right someday. Take that away from the car, and then you're going to make it the motor live a lot longer. And you said that some of the people get better fuel economy because the V8 is turned into a four-cylinder or a six-cylinder by the computer to save money and hopefully get better fuel economy. Okay, Ken, you're up next.
Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Okay, sir. Thank
you. So I got an 03 Tundra with check engine light. I replaced the gas cap because it came as a 0442 emissions control. I called you. You said, no, I did the wrong thing. So I took it in, and they did the control canister for $700, and now the check engine light's coming on again. What's the next smoke test
going
to cover?
Well, first of all, you got to go back to the shop that took your $700, and I would suggest that you be nice. I would suggest to them, hey, Mr. Salem, I brought it in. You guys checked the code, verified I had the same code. You checked it out. You told me that you could fix it. It was $700. And I gave you the authorization to fix it. And now I'm in the same boat I'm in now. And so what would you suggest that we do? Now, Kurt, I'll go first.
Okay.
We're going to look it over again, free of charge.
Yeah, it's a no charge.
No, it's a no charge. And if it's something unrelated, there may be a refund here. Yeah. But if we mess something up, we could have created a vacuum problem. We could have created a problem ourselves. Until we find out what it is, no one really knows what to do. But here's the only thing that I would say to you, Ken. I like it when customers say, let me get this straight, Mark. I've got this code. You have a $700 estimate on the table. When you're done, I'm not going to have this code for the next 30, 60, 90 days. And my answer should be yes. You will not have that code. So that kind of conversation just ensures that the shop and you are on the same page. But is this a shop you've patronized a lot?
No, first time with them. They were really cool when I did call them. They said, bring it in. We'll obviously discuss like you said. And I was very nice to them. They were very nice to me. I'm just kind of trying to pick your brain. What is the next thing? Is there something on the top of the gas can maybe or gas tank?
No.
So we just ran into this the other day, and a real good customer of ours. And I always try to lay the groundwork with these things that we're going to fix the biggest leak first.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So here, this one happened to be on the top. The fuel pressure sensor was leaking out. We did that one first. It came back with another one.
Leaking gas?
No. Leaking air.
Vacuum.
Air, yeah. Okay. So I try to lay the groundwork that, you know, I'm going to fix the biggest one first, but there may be, you know, small ones behind that big one. If that groundwork would have been laid, this would have been an easier pill to swallow. But the next thing is hook it back up to smoke and see where the next leak is.
Yeah.
Okay. Eric?
That's exactly the type of conversation I'm sorry, that's the exact type of conversation we like to have too. Just like cooling system, just like anything that's got leaks, you know, you pressurize the cooling system, you got a water pump that's running out of it. Well, once you get it back together, you didn't know that the, you know,
heater hose connections
had it. Yeah. Okay. So this is same type of thing.
Okay. And what he's talking about, the smoke test, is that this evaporative system is a very sophisticated system where we're going to suck fumes off the tank and send them forward to the engine and burn them again. Right?
Yep.
So we're not going to contaminate the air by venting the fuel tank into the atmosphere. We're going to suck those fumes and burn them again. So it's not uncommon for us to put smoke into that system. And then we surround the cars with everybody in the shop, inside the car, outside the car, and we just look for where smoke is escaping.
Right.
And so that's kind of what the smoke test is. It's going to be somewhere between the fuel tank and up front,
yep,
underneath the hood. And so all of that and plastic lines associated with this vapor, how many different plastic lines can you have?
Well, on a Toyota, there's about 30 feet of them.
Okay. It's 30 feet of lines divided into how many individual lines? Is there five that equal 30 feet?
One, two, three. There's three that run back and forth, and then there's a conglomeration of a spaghetti bowl, usually around the tank and canister.
Okay. All right. So there's a lot of connections.
Yeah.
And the computer's going to control that by opening this and closing that and doing this and doing that, right? Depending on how you drive, it doesn't want to suck fuel or smoke or it doesn't want to suck fumes out of the tank if the tank is really full and we're going to suck gas.
Yeah.
So there's all that going on. I think you may have picked, well, of course, the end result will tell you whether this shop is really good, but I like their response. Mm-hmm. The only thing I would do is I would say to them in a nice way, I'm assuming that from this point forward until you tell me otherwise that this is going to not cost me. And I think that's what you should say.
And I agree. So what's the chances of the canister being bad? He says, you know, it's possible, right?
What did they spend $700?
I would hope they would have bought
an OEM canister, right? Do they go bad, new in box?
No.
Oh, not, yeah, very, very, very seldom. What I was going to say is this is one of the reasons why we give back your old parts. Because
I accept my old parts. That's correct.
Yeah, so basically, let's just say it comes, if this were our shop, it comes back in and I find the pressure valve on the top of the tank, and you said, well, okay, so we need to do that. An appropriate response from you would be like, can you show me where this canister is bad? Absolutely. We plug these things out in the shop and we see it just, you know, smoke coming out the top. That puts you in a comfort zone. That puts you in a comfort zone with us. We're not trying to, you know, scam you for money or anything like that. But one of the reasons why we always give your old parts back, I can prove to you at a later date that was bad if it comes back, comes down to this.
And if we find out that it's really not that, it's a purge valve and not the canister, if we give them back the parts and they haven't thrown them away, we put the canister back on and we replace the purge valve. So if we misdiagnosed it, now we're not going to give you a fuel filter. We're not going to give you some big old greasy part. We're not going to give you the rear bearings of your differential because we aren't going to put those in. Plus, they're obvious as heck. So that's kind of how it works. But again, I like what I heard from your shop, and I'm impressed. So here's the thing. Call me back and let me know. And if they did fix it to your complete satisfaction, then maybe I'll talk about how nice they handled it. Is that okay?
You got it.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Thank you very much. Okay. Let's see where we're at. Rich, you're up next.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're good.
Good.
My beer cat's had two questions. My beer cat's not
okay. Hold on a minute. You got to turn your radio down in the background because we're not really hearing.
I got you on the speaker.
Okay, yeah.
How's that?
No, perfect. Go ahead.
I have an 05 Verano, and the rear hatch doesn't unlock when I unlock the doors. I went to Nissan to get a lock, and the guy says it could be something else besides just the lock.
Okay, so when you try to lock the doors from the master control on the driver's door, it doesn't work?
The rear hatch is unable to open, correct.
Okay. All right. That's not really a hard diagnosis.
No. I mean, he's right. I mean, it's going to be a lock actuator or in the hatch where it flexes, it broke a wire. I mean, that's about usually what we see, two things typically.
It's I don't know. How did you get to the lock How did you get there?
Well, I went to open the rear hatch, and I couldn't open it.
Okay, but you said that somebody said something about it's always the lock.
When I went to the parts at Nissan, the guy says sometimes it's not that simple, and one of your guys hit it, he said, actuator or something, I think in the passenger door or driver's door.
Okay. I don't know if there'd be a relationship there. We're struggling with that relationship, but then again, you're talking to a parts guy.
Yeah.
So, but we're struggling with that. If you're trying to work the hatch and it's intermittent or it doesn't work, the real simple thing
don't work at all.
Yeah, is just put a meter on it and see if the signal's getting to where it's at. Take a rubber mallet and slack the hit the actuator to see if we can get it to work. You know what? Lock your wife inside the trunk, okay? Give her a flashlight and a rubber hammer, and you flip the switch back and forth, and if she beats on the actuator and it works, then we're home free.
I'll tell you, I'm all for having people try to repair their own cars, but this is one of those things that's probably going to be better off at a shop getting diagnosed. Because I'm going to tell you right now what's going to happen is you're going to tear apart that rear door, and you're going to get about halfway through it, and you're going to go, yeah, I'm in over my head. And you're going to walk into us. You're going to walk into us with a rear door hatch, a panel and a box full of screws, and we're going to go, dude.
We're not going to go, dude.
You get my point. Yeah. Like I said, if this was something I thought you could do, by all means. But there's just some things that are just easier for us.
Okay.
And yeah, he said like the actuator was like $500 for a passenger door actuator.
And that's just the parts only, yeah.
Yeah, and get to it a little bit more. And there's a lot of merit to what you say. There's a lot of merit because that happens to us. When they bring the dashboard and it's in the back seat, that's an ugly situation. And I'll tell you what. Let me ask you a question, Kurt and Eric. Have you ever turned one of those just flat down?
Yes.
And it's true. that is a bad relationship from 1 to 10.
There's one that I wish I would have turned down.
There's some to I think of, too.
Yeah, there's a couple that I wish I had turned down. Try to be nice, get the sob story, and pull on my heartstrings.
Yeah, in Alan's case... It's the prettier. She was really pretty, and that's why he took it in. That's the only deal right there.
Sometimes this one.
And he's not allowed at the front counter now. You know, we're keeping him. Well, his wife had a big thing to do with that. So anyway, that's our advice, Rich.
Yeah. My second question real quick is when it's like 105 or hotter and the driver's door is parked towards the sun, the driver's door I have to open with a key. Is that... Actuator again, too. Am I looking at dual actuators?
That's
probably.
That's a very good symptoms of an actuator. It's overheating and it just can't work when it's that hot.
And what about if he kept the window down, knowing that it was going to happen, and he could reach inside and activate it from inside? Would that help the diagnostic?
I could work it.
Go ahead.
It doesn't work if I try to push the button, I have to use the key.
Okay.
If you've been driving the vehicle for a while, and even though it's in the sun, but you have the air conditioning on, will it work then?
If I put a bag of ice on it, it'll work, but it does open with the key, or the back door opens and not the front door.
Yeah. All right. Well, Eric, I understand where you're going with that, but I listened carefully to that. It was air conditioning in the summertime.
Yeah.
So let's get the inside of the car nice and cool, and then does that make any difference?
And he's saying the ice did, too. So cooling it down works. So one's going to be an actuator overheating.
Okay, why wouldn't he just take the garden hose and fill the door up with water?
Because the door leaks.
I'm kidding. But I think that's a better picture, you know what I mean? That's a better picture right there. Okay, we're going to be back in a minute. And, gosh, if you weren't here, I don't know what I'd do today. Eric's helping me run the board today. Anyway, Eric and Kurt from Kurt's Automotive, I-17 and Bell, they're here. Kurt and I are the gray-haired guys. Alan's my son. And, Eric, how are you related to Kurt?
I married his daughter.
Oh, boy. How bad was your head hurting that day? No, not her. I'm talking about your father-in-law, but nevertheless.
He's the one that asked me to come work for him.
Is that right?
Yeah.
that you had your chance to get a lot of money at that point. Did you negotiate good?
I was a horrible negotiator at 18.
Okay. All right.
He's working on getting it at the end, though, Mark.
Oh, absolutely. All right. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing is on Main Street just east of Stapley. They've been around since 1970. Brian and Thelma are just the salt of the earth, and I've known both of their parents since the 70s. So one of them's Vivian, one of them Thompson, and I've known both of them in the old gas station business. So if you're in Mesa, it's the only shop I can recommend in Mesa and in the East Valley is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. Let's go back. Vicki, ladies first. How can we help you?
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I've been without a car for 6 years, so I'm going to buy a car. And you know, I look at for smoke coming out of the tailpipe, and I look for, you know, oil, and I know a little bit about cars, but I'll tell you, it's a scary thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know where to go, really, to look. A Craigslist is, you know, I've been scammed already, and
I do have an answer for you, Kirk.
Okay.
Used car check over?
Absolutely.
How much?
About anywhere from $80 to $120, depending on how thorough you get.
Okay.
And it'll always be worth that and more.
And not only that, I thank you for that, because what's our used car check over?
$149.
Okay.
Out the door.
And what happens is we're going to give you the opportunity to negotiate, because we're going to write down the stuff that needs now and needs in the future. So this used car check over, all the tires, all the brakes, all the electrical, we work all the windows, we do an emissions test, we make sure all the warning things work.
Yes.
Have I lost?
Road tests.
Suspension,
steering.
Everything.
But
yeah.
Is that after I buy the car? Because I only have a very limited amount of money to spend, and I have to put back a little bit for, you know, future repairs. Of course, if I come to you, that'll help a lot.
Well,
there's so many things that can be wrong.
No, this is before.
Right.
Yeah. This is before. So if it's a dealer or if it's a private party, you just say, I would really like to have this car checked over, and I'd like to take it to wherever you want to take it and say, this is what it's going to be. Almost now, what percentage, the three of you, what percentage of the time is there going to be a credit associated with the repair from the seller?
Oh,
we
usually, most of the time,
yeah,
without a doubt, most of the time, somebody, the dealer will either take care of it or they'll pay to have it fixed.
Yeah, I think what you meant is a discount. Yeah,
Okay,
So
a discount from the seller, who, no matter private party or a used car lot or whatever.
If they tell you that you can't inspect it, walk away.
Yeah.
I mean, original owner. There is so much to look at. That $149 can save you so much in the
thousands.
I can't tell you how many cars that we've seen from, you know, national chains and
rental
used cars and all kinds of stuff that are flood damaged, that have the titles have been washed. We peel back the carpet on these things and there's 2 inches of sand and seashells in the bottom. I mean to tell you, I'm not joking. It happens every day.
And vehicle emissions and stuff like that.
Let me ask you this. Could I actually buy a fairly good used car for $4,000?
Guys?
Well, I mean, it depends. I mean, it depends on what kind of car you're going to get. You're not going to get a Tahoe, or something like that.
Okay, but let me – really, the one owner – and I'm making – I'm just going using generalities. One owner, low mileage, all the maintenance records, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you can. You're going to have to hunt.
Yeah.
Because something for $4,000 is probably going to need some work. That's why you need to have somebody check it out to minimize that next work.
But 4,000 is okay. She could go to 4,500 or 5, but still bring the car in and negotiate a better price.
Sure. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So it's, I don't think you should lock it 4 if that's the budget. No. That's fine. What part of town do you live in?
I'm at East Indian School Road in Miller.
Okay.
In Scottsdale.
There's Bell Automotive down on McDowell and just west of Pima, west of the 101.
Bell Automotive?
Bell Automotive. And Craig is there.
Who, Mike?
It's on McDowell on the north side of the road just west of Pima.
Oh, Pima. Oh, there was something else I wanted to ask. I know I always ask them when they change the timing belt or chain. Mm-hmm. And one of them had a sticker on there. It showed the sticker right in, on the engine, like right on the radiator, perhaps. It was a picture of when it was changed. And I thought that was good. That was really good. I've never seen that before.
Are you sure it doesn't show the timing belt loop and how to install it? Have you ever seen a sticker?
Yeah. We put them anytime we do timing belts. We label a sticker.
All right, I'm wrong.
As a matter of fact, the kit usually comes with the sticker.
Okay, yeah. The kit comes with the sticker, and you write down the miles or the date.
Yeah, that's pretty common. Okay. I mean, any good shop usually does that.
And can you buy that sticker by itself?
I'm just asking.
I've never had a reason to look. Well, that's not a bad idea. No, I'm just kidding. Come on.
All right.
What I'd really like, just one more question, is what I'd really like is I saw a 2006 Jaguar S-Type, and I know they cost a lot to repair because I had one in 1977. It was a great car.
Nope.
But, you know, and they've got all of the records.
No. I don't care. No. There's four heads shaking here, okay?
And Mark and I have had Jaguars.
Yeah. And like Kurt said, what?
Me and you have both owned Jaguars and loved them.
Oh, we did.
But they're just too expensive to repair.
Really expensive.
And they're expensive for us to repair our own.
Yeah.
And at Kurt's shop, it's going to be three times his cost. I'm lying about that. Okay, we're gonna have to take. Thank you, Vicky. Thank you for letting us laugh at your Jaguar idea. But that ain't going to happen. I don't know. None of us would be part of that.
We'd
still do your car check over.
Yeah, but not for a limited budget. They just don't work.
Yeah. Okay, John. I'm going to take your question and get you on the other side of the break. Go ahead, sir.
I've got the strangest question you'll ever have.
Okay.
Do you do anything with antique farm tractors?
Antique farm tractors. Yes. Yes. The answer is yes. Parts are a little tough because it's a matter of trying to identify where the parts book is for the item it's got.
Well, you mentioned book. That's what I want: an owner's manual or an operator's manual for the tractor I bought.
Well, I would think you'd start with some of the companies that sell tractors, Massey Ferguson's and stuff here in town. I also think you get on the internet and just Google the year and the make of your tractor, 59 Massey, tractor.
Well, there's a big following for that stuff, so you should be able to find it unless it's something really unusual.
Yeah, what kind is it, real quick?
Well, it's a Farmall, a red one.
Okay.
From the 1950s. They sold even more than John Deere's did for about 15 years.
Okay. All right.
So you'd think there'd be something available, but I haven't been able to find anything yet.
If you send me an email, I'll have somebody look at that I'm real confident in their ability to find it if it's out there.
Okay.
So if you'd send me marksalem.com, Mark. At
Let
Mark,
me write that down just a minute.
Yes, my name.
Mark. M-A-R-K or
yes?
M-A-R-C?
No, K.
Which?
Salem.
Okay.
Like the cigarette, Salem. I got to go. We'll be back. Life has just not been good to me lately. it's more difficult than it ever was. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We talked about Thompson, but we didn't talk about Automatic Transmission Exchange at 40th Street and Washington. Phil has been around since Jesus was a baby. Phil knows the very first transmission that came off the line, and Phil is really good. So if you have a transmission problem and you want somebody at Automatic Transmission Exchange to just drive it, they are not going to go with you to Saguaro Lake, okay? That's not happening. But around the block, as long as they can duplicate it, then they're happy to do that. Did I tell you that somebody took him? He had a boat on the back of his van. He goes, "You come on with me." And the next thing Phil knows is he's at Lake Pleasant. He's at Lake Pleasant. It's a true story.
I hope the guy brought some bait and some fishing poles.
He says, I just thought any minute he'll turn around. He goes, all of a sudden, he goes, there's this one hill that it does it. And he's got the boat on the back of it. Phil says, I was gone for 2.5 hours. I said, that lesson there, where are we going on this?
Did he get it fixed, though?
No. He said it took him 2.5 hours there, 2.5 hours back, or something
like
that.
Did he do it?
No, he says whatever it was three times the bill. I didn't, you know, in our world, if you don't want the customer, I hate to put it this way, you hit him in the middle of the head with a big, huge bill. I mean, if it's $300, you tell them it's a grand.
Yeah.
Because they'll go. Now, they're going to tell everybody you're really expensive, but they're not going to tell everybody you're a jerk.
Yeah.
They're
yeah.
just going to say, oh, he's really expensive. Okay, that's okay with me. Yeah. But if it's one of those, my aunt Mabel in Chicago diagnosed it, and this is what I want you to fix, then we're out of here.
Yeah.
Okay, Harry. We're going to go to Harry. Harry, good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys doing? I see you got my boys there from the church group.
I checked him out of the jail this morning.
Well, hey, that's good. Yeah? When do you have to send him back?
You know, I you know what, Harry, I'm not taking him back because they'll both have warrants out for their arrest.
Well, you get a finder's fee. I think it's called a bounty, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, I'm going to drop them off at Black Canyon City and see if they can find their way home. So anyway, what's up,
hey,
Ryan?
I got a two question with kind of like back to the school of Rodney Dangerfield deal where you have many parts to go with the two questions.
Okay.
On the Ford EcoBoost 3.5, what do you like and dislike? And also about the aftermarket exhaust and the air intakes. A lot of them say not CARB certified, so I guess that's kind of a red flag with those.
Well, I think I'll chime in first. The EcoBoost, that's the first word that just scares me to death.
Ford.
The Ford. all right, Eric, EcoBoost.
Really, the newer generations, the first few years had some big problems, but the newer generations aren't doing too bad, but they still, we just did an exhaust manifold because they heat them up because you get them so hot because you're running them all the time. We did they cracked the manifolds. We've done turbos on them, but all in all, I mean, they've got their problems. The Dodges and Chevys got theirs. It's just a different way to design it.
And the heat, you're right.
Yeah.
If they're flogging it to death and they're going up Mount Ord, they don't know what the EGTs are or anything like that at all. So they end up with something that's red hot underneath the hood. Then the best thing to do is put a couple of cold beers on it and the smell and the broken manifold. Alan, EcoBoost.
Like them. Late models are better. Ford's first.
Yeah,
Ford's first in-house motor. So they're real protective over that stuff. So they don't like when we beef them up. Stay away from exhaust. They sound like absolute crap. They sound like a lawnmower / weed eater / it's the worst.
Wait
the
a minute.
Worst,
is this the worst before? Thing. Hey, before or after the exhaust?
After the exhaust. Okay. Do not do it. Absolutely, unequivocally. If you're going to do anything, do Stainless Works headers with some high flow cats. That's completely CARB certified.
And that's how much?
A lot.
No.
Three grand? $3,000.
Okay.
As far as intakes, they work really well on those things. And a lot of them do have EO numbers. I know AFEs have EO numbers on them. But those are really good. Intakes on those things work good.
AFE is the brand. EO is the CARB certification number. I have to interpret his numbers.
Interpret?
It sounds like it's going
to
hurt.
Interpretation.
You know what? Watch now.
Yeah, they can't hear.
Alan's gone.
That's the disadvantage about having you at the controls.
Exactly right. Yeah, that's exactly right. Okay, Harry, does that do it?
How about Ram and the Hemi? My son bought a Ram.
I like them. Again, they got their own set of problems. They got the cylinder displacement lifters, and they have problems with those too. So, again, we've went in, changed cams, removed the lifter, and put a CARB certified program into it. So,
and is this a new one, Harry, or a used one?
Yes, it's a 2020.
Yeah, if he's got they got the electric assist now on them too. They give him an extra bit of power. I don't know. I haven't had enough longevity with those to know anything about them if he went that way or not.
Alan, wait a minute. Let me turn you on now that you're behaving yourself.
Good. I'll tell you, if I was going to buy a half ton truck right now, I hate to say this, but I would probably. I drove a new 2021 GM half ton with that little 3 liter, what is it, the Duramax or whatever?
The Duramax inline six.
I mean,
that was an awesome truck. That was a really awesome truck. I'm not a huge GM guy, but yeah, that's an awesome truck. 5.7 Hemi, just bought one. They're good.
You just bought one?
Yeah, that's Heather's car.
Oh.
She got a 5.7 in that. So other than that, yeah, I mean, it's good. I'm not obviously worried about the lifters too much. I've disabled them, but.
Oh, that's just great. I mean, that is just great. Heather, you bought her a Hemi.
Yeah, in the Durango.
I understand.
Yeah,
I understand. So he didn't buy Heather a Durango.
No,
he bought what he wanted with the Hemi motor.
He didn't want to drive a six-cylinder when he drove her car.
Yeah, and before that, she drove a little Dodge van. Yeah. You know what I mean? And he wouldn't even go with it. He wouldn't even go with her. Anyway, did that take care of it?
I think so. You guys are pretty well schooled on that. So
yeah,
that's why I called.
All righty.
Well, you guys have a good day.
All right. Thank you. Dave, you stay right there. I got to take a break. Anybody else? 602-508-0960. Forty-four minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, Kurt Rock from Kurt's Automotive, Eric, his number one guy, number two guy, number three guy, Alan, my son, who we just checked out of the insane asylum, and Mark Salem, who never had a brain. So Larry Harker's Auto is at 43rd and 38th in Indian School Road. Bob and Alan run Larry Harker's Auto. Alan's at the front counter, Bob's in the shop, and they, like many of us, have a young technician that just really is outstanding. So if you're in that area, you need an oil change, or you've got some drivability problem or some code, then I would suggest, if you don't have a garage, Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Dave, you're up. How can we help you?
Hey, Mark, I had an old auto x-ray scanner that quit working on me. What do you guys typically use there, you know, in the shop anymore? I mean, what's out there that's worth throwing some money at?
Okay, all right. First of all, Eric, without names, how much is the last scanner you bought?
$4,000.
Alan?
Yeah, I'd say they start for a good one at $3,500, $4,000.
Kurt?
I bought the one he's got.
All right, let me ask you this. How many scanners you got?
Three.
Alan?
We probably got 10.
Okay, and some of them were ones we bought used, and some of them we got to test and all that other kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So there is no real scanner that's going to do everything for everybody. There's some proprietary ones. There's some universal ones, but then there's also some Fords and Chevys. I mean, Ford has 400 numbers of scanners. Chevrolet and Dodge, two or three.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, they're pretty doggone expensive. Now, here's the other problem. The scanner is going to give you data, oftentimes in numbers, and you have to know what's a good number or a bad number. And so when you're looking at the O2 sensor, and you've got an O2 sensor code, you have to understand what 0.01 and 0.09 means and which one's good and which one's bad. So did I answer your question okay?
Well, kind of. I just curious what brands you guys are getting into anymore, too. But anyway, I've got another question.
Okay, hold on. I'll get that. Alan, which brand do you typically use?
If we were going to buy a scanner, it would be a Mac or a Snap-on.
A Mac or a Snap-on?
Mac or Snap-on.
Eric? Which one do you use the most?
I use my Altel the most.
Altel?
Yeah.
Okay. So there you go. Matco, Snap-on, or Altel. Those are the ones that we use a lot, that we depend on a lot. Yeah. So that's what it
real,
is.
Real quick, what are you trying to do?
Well, I'll look at a code on my kid's car or a friend's car, and I put the money into a scanner and auto X-ray. You know, it was originally around $600, and now mine don't work anymore. And I just thought, well, it was kind of fun watching a lot of the data flow on there, even though I didn't understand it. You know, watching.
Sure.
You know, tell me if I was turning the steering wheel and all kinds of crap. This mesmerized me.
Yeah. No, you're right. Idle air control motor, what's the number to idle?
It depends which vehicle.
Ah, see there? See there? Alan, O2 sensor, rich and lean.
Not
what number?
I don't even know.
0.1 to 0.9?
Unless you got a bias ground voltage and it's at 2.5 to 3.5.
Okay.
See, that's what I was going to say.
Okay.
Yeah, I knew he was going to say that. I can see that.
Give me another example. Mass airflow.
In hertz or in voltage?
In voltage. Which one is it going to be displayed in your scanner?
Depends which vehicle.
Okay. All right. So give me a voltage for wide open throttle.
4.5.
And grams?
dependent upon a vehicle, but anywhere from 120 to 400.
Okay. So those are the kinds of numbers that you're likely to see, and unless you can interpret those numbers, then you're not – and you not only interpret them, but you have to know what's normal.
Yeah.
So what's a normal grams sitting there at idle?
Liters per – grams per liter at 600 RPM.
Okay. Okay. Alan?
Yep.
Well, the other thing, Mark, is once you get this information, you got to have this car-specific information to compare it to, and that's why we have Mitchell and ALLDATA information. So we not only have the scanners, and we spend all this money on information so that Eric's got and Alan's got all the stuff they need to know whether they've got something out of sync.
Models and makes. Any idea the numbers?
More than two.
Okay. Yeah, that would surprise a lot of people. If I'm not mistaken, we had more than 200 models in our database after the makes. 200 models. So, and you have all those engine combinations as well. So it gets kind of technical. What do you pay for Mitchell or ALLDATA?
Well, we have the whole Mitchell, including the service writing contract and everything. That's $540 a month, and all that is another $225 or so. So, and then we have Identifix we tie in there. So I'm paying about $1,000 a month just to have information on hand.
And car-specific information.
Yeah.
That's the important part. Did that help you out, Dave?
Oh, yeah, that did.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, my other question, 2016 Silverado, that it's getting the evaporator code, and what's it typically run to diagnose and correct that?
Hey. Well, we'll diagnose it. We don't know what the correction is till we diagnose it. Eric,
yeah, you could be. It's a wide range of symptoms, but you're going to start off with a basic $135 to $150 inspection, and that's going to test that whole system, smoke test, and include solenoid testing.
Okay, now how many times does that cover the repair? I mean, you find it and you fix it. Find it and it's all the money and fix it.
I would say on an EVAP system, probably really only about 15-20% of the time.
Okay, and most of the time you got a hard part or you've got the solenoid that's not activating or something like that, but there is the time we find broken lines or we find a connection come loose or something like that.
Yeah.
Or the customer's overfilling the tank and the whole system is full of gasoline.
Yeah.
So that's the best we can do. But good luck to you, Dave. Terry, you're up next. How can we help you?
Yeah, I got a F-Word 150, and I got caught out of town, and I had to have an intake manifold put on it. Ever since then, my temperature gauge doesn't work correctly. It'll redline, but it's not overheating. When I got back to town, I had my guy check it out. We can't figure it out short of taking that intake manifold off. And where I may have messed up is I wasn't on my A game because it was 4th of July weekend. I'm not sure they put a Mopar part in this thing.
Okay, well, Mopar doesn't even make their own parts. So we're not, you know, if you want to, really and truly, it isn't going to be a Mopar part because that part in a box we can buy in five other boxes. So it's no real big deal. Eric?
It really sounds like that probably when they had it off, he said Ford. So they have the cylinder head temperature sensors.
Uh-huh.
Or for some reason, the thermostat that they put in, they got put in backwards because the thermostat on those, if I remember right, are in the intake manifolds. So if they inverted it or something, it could be acting weird. It really could be overheating.
We saw one of those this week.
Hey, and why don't you do this? Go get a temperature gun from, what's the name of that?
Harbor Freight.
And gun the top hose. And we don't want it to be at 220. 220 is kind of a normal range.
I've had my local guy here do that, and no issues there.
Okay. So you just got a reading that's wrong.
Yeah,
so where's the gauge at?
I guess I'm a little confused. On my dash?
No. No. Is the gauge reading, what's concerning to you? Is it past 3/4? Is it over half? Where's the gauge reading that's got you concerned?
Oh, it'll go 3/4, and sometimes it'll red line.
Okay. All right.
Ford likes to use the gauge up until the cylinder head temperature is reading wrong, and then it'll peg the gauge out. And I don't care what it's doing. It'll just keep it pegged. So.
Okay.
In that situation, I'm thinking wire got messed up for the head cylinder temperature, some, you know, when they had it apart.
It lost control of the head cylinder temperature, so as a result of that, it's going to turn on the overheat light or whatever it's got. If it wasn't a problem before you started, then obviously you created the problem. This doesn't seem to be something that's going to cost hours and hours and hours to diagnose.
No.
It may be the problem. Which wire go? But it doesn't sound like it's going to be something. So what would you bid this for, Eric?
What do you mean by
bid the diagnostics?
Oh,
to look
yeah,
at?
The diagnostics would be your typical one, you know, 140 something like
okay.
that.
Okay, and so that's kind of. And then how often is that going to be a fix included? Switch these two wires, fix this broken wire.
If you just see it, they pinched this wire. You know, if you have to unbolt the manifold or whatever to get back to it, but. Then, if they didn't connect it really tight at a connector or something, we fix it.
If there's a wire under the manifold, you just take a big hammer and bend the manifold around it. Seemingly, Christmas, you guys are just killing me.
That's too much work, Mark. Take side cutters and snip the wire.
Yeah, run around it. If it's not leaking water or vacuum, let's run around it.
Yeah.
All righty, well, good luck to you, Terry. That's the best we can do. Nick, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, I've got a Shakespearean question having to do with a automatic transmission.
Okay.
And the question is to change or not to change. That is the question.
Well,
I hear that if you change your oil, it'll cause it to start to slip if it's dirty. And I have a specific thing. I've been married for about 4 years, and my wife has a 2002 GMC pickup with a automatic transmission, and she said she had it changed once. It's got 143,000 miles on it, 19 years old. And
I only got 2 minutes. I mean, before I got to be out, let's talk about it. Eric, let's start with the first question, and Kurt and Alan. In the old days, I think we'll agree. When you change the fluid after it's been sitting there for 400 years, oftentimes it would create problems.
That's where that whole thing come from, before electronics.
Okay. Now, today, it virtually never happens unless the pan is filled with half of the transmission.
Right.
And unless there was already a problem.
Yes.
So
really and truly, all of us can smell the fluid and look at the fluid on the dipstick to tell you what we think with respect to whether it needs it or not. And then I don't know about you guys, but what we try to do is the first service, we're going to do the filter in the pan. The next service, we're going to flush it. I'd like to see what the metal is in the pan. Yeah. I'd like to see if there's any snap rings that are broken. Yeah. I really would like to see what's in there after the transmission polishes itself.
Yeah.
But then after that, the next time we'll just push the fluid in and out and leave the filter there. So we're going to just say the O2, it's been sitting a while. I don't think transmission degrades when it sits in the pan for a while.
No,
I don't think that's something that I would worry about. So, and the color is important, kind of pink, kind of red, kind of you could see light through it. But if it's brown and it's muddy, then, that would probably necessitate a flush and a filter. To get it all.
Because, you'd want to see, especially if he had really dark fluid, want to see what the pan looks like, you know, determine whether we're going to have problems down the road or it just happens it got dark because somebody got it hot once.
And then... We don't see where you take something that's got some chocolate in it and put new fluid in it and create a problem it didn't have before.
Right.
No.
It does. That's the old power glides and the old torque flights and all that stuff.
Yeah, that used to be in the old days, but we haven't had that for years.
Yeah. Alrighty, Nick, that's the best we can do, buddy. I don't know if we're siding with you or your wife, but I think we would have probably sided with your wife if we'd have known which side she was on. Anyway, Kurt and Eric, thanks for spending your Saturday with us.
Thank you.
You guys are at Bell and I-17, open Monday through Friday or Saturday too?
Monday through Friday.
And we're the same way. We're open Monday through Friday.
Yeah.
And from engine overhauls, transmission replacements, and everything in between?
Everything but weed eaters and lawnmowers, much to what we've been accused of.
Yeah. I've told a lot of people that you can
I know you do, Mark.
Weed eaters and lawnmowers. You don't?
Oh, we quit.
Oh.
Well, we, We get Saturdays. We quit that.
I'm sorry. I-17 and Bell, Kurtz Auto, they've gone from weed eaters to lawnmowers. They stopped doing that, but they like VW Bugs. What else do you like? Mazda, the old Mazda carbureted trucks?
Hondas were the worst.
What about the Peugeots? You forgot
Peugeots. Oh, yeah, Peugeots. Absolutely. So those are the things that Kurtz really likes. I-17 and Bell. Ask for Eric. But if you're really in bad shape and your yard's real tall, then you can take your weed eater, and as a courtesy, they'll get it running.
I'll ship it up to Mark. He fixes them on the side.
You know what? We'll be back next week.